Unspoken Issues.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Unspoken Issues. We are back. My name is Jesse Starcher, joined by Chris Armstrong. Chris Armstrong, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well, doing well.
I guess let me shoot it over to you because you're the one that came up with the genesis of this idea.
Yeah, I was thinking of twist endings, and you know that's something the comics does from time to time. It's not like you don't see them a whole lot, but these are pretty big ones here. So I wanted to do a Marvel one and a DC one, mm-hmm. And the first one that popped up in my head for Marvel was obviously Thunderbolts number one, because that's kind of a big one.
Yeah,
and then for DC, I had a few ideas. This one, another idea I had was the twist of who the killer was in The Long Halloween. So I had actually suggested to you, you know, I got your 2 cents, and you said it would probably be more fun to talk about the Armageddon 2001 twist if that won the poll, which I agree. So that's what we
want. Well, okay, our Thunderbolts number one. In order to vote for that, you had to give that post a love, since our polls have been broken by Facebook. We're resulting to emojis, which is just fine. So if you loved the post, you voted for Thunderbolts number one. If you left an angry face, ladies and gentlemen, you were voting for Armageddon 2001 special number two. So the way the vote breaks out here, according to what we've come up with, 33%, 10 votes, goes to Armageddon 2001, and the winner by 66%, 20 votes total, it is Thunderbolts number one. So let's real quick, because I initially wanted to talk about Armageddon 2001, I want to just kind of throw in, you know, we're not going to go in depth on it, but I just want to kind of throw in my personal experience and kind of what I've read. Sure. And it's been a while since I've jumped into what all went down. So I'm sure there's probably some more knowledge out there that somebody else either has about this whole twist ending that fell flat on its face, apparently. So as a kid, I can clearly remember picking these issues up. And so this came out, oh my goodness, let me pull this up here real quick. I want to go to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, because this had to have been like really early 90s. Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know, but it's got to be 90 or 91, because I did not have this issue or the first issue, but I had a few of crossover issues and like some of the annuals, and I had a couple of those.
Yeah.
And that was when I first got into comics. So I would think it's probably 90 sometime.
Okay. So Armageddon 2001, number two, cover date, October 91. So this is the final issue. So I'm sure like the lead up to this was probably earlier on in the year. September 3rd, 1991 is the on sale date. So myself, I'm a big fan of time travel. if you know me, that's one of the plot devices that I love, and Armageddon 2001 was pretty much centralized around that plot. I think we get our introduction, correct me if I'm wrong here, but we get our introduction to make sure I pronounce this right, Wave Rider.
I believe so.
He shows up here, and he's the one that's kind of going through each of our titles, because we had the whole Armageddon 2001 annuals that were coming out, correct? Like showing.
Right, I believe each annual he was looking into the future of the character, like showing, because he was trying to figure out who the Monarch was.
Yeah,
he was like a supervillain in the future.
Exactly. So they're trying to figure out the identity of this villain, and the Wave Rider is kind of flying through all these different teams' futures and checking those out. So I was a huge fan, and I was getting as many of those as I could because I liked the plot, I liked the mystery, and I was caught up in it. Now, if I remember correctly, the plan for this was to have somebody else be the villain, or at least another heavy hitter be the villain. But when the reveal happened, Hawk of Hawk and Dove, and that apparently did not leave a good taste in a lot of people's mouths. For me, right. I didn't care. I mean, I was invested. I wasn't a big DC guy anyway. So if you would have told me that, you know, Hawk is not that big of a character and he shouldn't be wasted on this, then I would have been like, oh, okay, well, whatever. It was still neat to see where what we got in the story up to the ending. And
especially if you're young and you don't have a frame of reference for like that Hawk, the Hawk reveal should be disappointing. Like, if you don't, I mean, obviously if you're 10, 11, 12 years old, you've probably only been reading comics a couple of years, 3 or 4 years ago. So,
yeah. So how about you? I mean, you said you were
it was years later before, like I said, I had a couple of the annuals. I had a Superman issue. I think I had a Batman one, maybe one or two others, but I never saw how the storyline ended or anything. I wasn't really into it. I didn't really care much for DC at that time. I didn't really get into DC until several years later, really. Although I would read them occasionally, but, I remember reading in, I think, Wizard, later on down the line, how everybody was really disappointed in the way the storyline resolved, and that the original plan was Captain Atom was the Monarch, which makes sense. He's a super powerful character and whatnot. And apparently that news got leaked somehow. So comic fans knew months before the reveal, it's going to be Captain Atom. And so DC scrambled to be like, no, we have to do something else. And so they had to kind of with bubblegum and paperclips put together some new storyline to resolve it. And I believe, like I said, I haven't read it, so I don't know this for certain, but I've heard other people talk about it as if that reveal contradicts stuff that happened in the storyline itself. So it doesn't even make sense logically. So yeah, people were really pissed about it. I believe it has been sort of retconned in more recent comics to make it where Monarch is Captain Atom, but
at
this point, it's too late.
Yeah, it's DC's apology, and what's done is done, I guess. It's Armageddon 2001. I can remember that was comfort for me when I was sick one year. I remember I was sick, and I had all these issues of Armageddon 2001, and it was probably one of the first real storylines that I jumped or actually tried to collect all of,
like a big crossover.
I tried to get all the issues in this event that I can recall watching, it's one of the earlier ones, because I know Inferno did that for me as well. I think that might have been one of the earlier ones too, where I was trying to get all the issues, or at least all the main X titles. So if you're trying to get everything, good luck. But it was also another one of those titles or events that I wanted to go back on my own show, Source Material, and revisit at some point. Actually, that was in the plans from the first year back in 2016. I was going to cover the whole series with a friend of mine. We just never got around to it. Things got in the way. So at some point, I'm sure me and you, I know for sure I will. We're going to get it in our hands and we're going to read it again.
I'd be down.
Yeah, let's get into our main reason why we're here, which is Thunderbolts number one. So
yes,
I want to say that I never read any of the Thunderbolts.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently, what was it, last year I think it was, covered the whole Onslaught epic on Source Material. So you were there, that's right. And back in the day I was picking up Onslaught off the shelves. But Thunderbolts, new title, comes out, it was shortly after according to the book, it's like these events, they take place weeks after Onslaught has disappeared, and so have the Fantastic Four and the Avengers. According to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, Thunderbolts number one has a cover date of April 97, February 19th, 1997, it hits the shelves. So,
and I believe, I want to say Onslaught was a summer-like crossover.
Yep.
It probably wrapped in like August, September, something like that. So we're looking at 5-6 months later.
Yeah. So I don't recall ever seeing Thunderbolts on the shelves. I don't recall ever picking it up. But I'll tell you right now, within the last few years, the talk of the ending of Thunderbolts was the first time that I'd heard about it. But there was a lot of discussion about it for some reason just recently. So I'm known about this reveal for a very long time, and today was the first day I ever actually sat down and read the issue. Yeah. I can tell you that when we get to this reveal and talk about it tonight, in 97, that probably would have blew my mind. I mean, legitimately, I would have been like, holy crap. So written by Kurt Busiek, penciled by Mark Bagley, both renowned at this time in 97. They're very well-known writer and artist. Inked by Vince Russell, and lettered by Dave Lanfear, colored by Joe Rosas. So let me ask you about this issue. Did you get this issue off the stands, or is this something that you had heard about and wanted to go back and read?
No, I was there on the ground floor. I, you know, I was pretty much at my comic book fiend peak in the, late 90s. So I'd gotten into comics in the early 90s, took a couple years off, got back into it in like 96, which was right when Onslaught was happening. I guess maybe 95, because I remember being into the Marvel versus DC stuff, which came out, I think, in 95. So by 96, I'm back in full swing and the Onslaught stuff's going on, Heroes Reborn, all that stuff. And I was a huge fan of Bagley. Mm-hmm. So when I saw he was doing a new superhero team and it's all these new characters, you know, there was no way I was going to miss it. So, yeah, I was there ground floor. Now, I did not have the pleasure of seeing the shocking ending, because it was what it was known going into it, like that there was going to be a surprise twist ending to this comic.
Oh, really?
It was advertised that way and kind of hyped up.
Okay.
And so, as I recall, a buddy of mine had picked it up for me. I don't remember the exact details. I'm assuming I couldn't go to the comic shop on Wednesday. So I told him, like, hey, pick up Thunderbolts for me. It's coming out this week. And so the next day at school, he was going to give me my copy.
This is going to be a sad story.
And so you know, he ruined it. He Now, in retrospect, we've talked about it since then. This is going back 23 years ago or whatever, 24. He claims that I couldn't wait to
ask him
into school that day to read it. So I told him, just tell me what the ending is.
Oh, no.
And that's why. And so, and maybe that, I mean, it's probably true. He's a trustworthy person. That's probably the case. But I just remember it as being like, oh, he ruined it.
Oh, man.
But it didn't ruin it really, because it's still pretty awesome ending and pretty cool comic.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's go ahead. We'll get into the synopsis. So the title of this issue is called Justice Like Lightning, which I think is actually at the top of the issue. It's the front cover.
Kind of the tagline.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about the front cover real quick. If you got it there in front of you, boy, is this indicative of mid-90s Marvel to me for some reason. But yeah, we have the Thunderbolts on the front, and you know, if you would have handed me this comic, I would have been like, oh hey, we got a new comic, or we have a new Marvel team coming out in 97, here we go, it's the Thunderbolts, who's this going to be? All these characters look new. I mean, I don't think there's anybody on the front of this cover. I know Songbird has had probably the more famous bit. I don't know if she was known as Songbird going into this or not. I know that I know more about Songbird as a member of this team for some reason than the rest of these people.
Songbird has had probably the most impact since Thunderbolt.
Since. Because
she was a big part of the Avengers Forever crossover, which we covered on Source Material.
That's right. Okay. Yeah,
she was a future Avenger in that book. And there have been many iterations of the Thunderbolts since then, since the 90s. This group kind of went in through like the early 2000s before it kind of shifted into a different type of a book. And then eventually it got kind of rebooted as like a Suicide Squad style comic in like the Secret Invasion era of Marvel stuff. So Songbird is one of the few Thunderbolt characters that kind of always seems to be part of each iteration of the team and whatnot.
Okay. Well, discover the shocking secret behind Marvel's newest champions right there on the front cover. Right there. So, all right, synopsis time. Weeks after the devastation brought to New York City by the villain Onslaught, the world is still trying to recover from the apparent loss of the Avengers and the Fantastic Four. The city is just beginning to rebuild, but with most of the buildings still a wreck, crime is running rampant in the streets. While the people mourn their missing heroes, they begin to wonder who will take their place to keep them safe from the ever-present threat of supervillainy. While a group of thieves called the Rat Pack loot surrounding valuables from vacant businesses, a new team arrives to stop them. A new team calls themselves the Thunderbolts, who are comprised of Citizen V, the swashbuckling grandson of the original Citizen V that fought in World War II, who also happens to lead the group. Atlas, the size-changing powerhouse. The brash technology-controlling Techno. Mach 1, a hero with the firepower and maneuverability of a human-sized jet. Songbird, who is able to use her voice as a weapon and even going so far as to be able to construct solid objects with sound. And finally, Meteorite. And I had to look up her powers. I mean, she's kind of your all-around superhero. She can fly, super strength, super speed, super stamina.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, durability, agility, reflexes, intangibility, and photokinesis, according to what I looked up on the internet there. Even though they are able to somewhat best the Rat Pack, the villains escape. Heading back to their headquarters, the media descends on these new heroes to find out just who they are, with the hopes that the void of their missing heroes may finally start to fill. During their conversations with the media, the Rat Pack are spotted and the Thunderbolts are off to bring them to justice. There's only one problem. On their way towards the Rat Pack's location on Liberty Island, they meet up with the toughest challenge yet, the Wrecking Crew, comprised of the Wrecker, Bulldozer, Pile Driver, and Thunderball. These guys are no sissies. I mean, really, these guys are some.
The villains Marvel trots out to say, hey, if you can take these guys down, it's an impressive feat.
Exactly. As the teams battle and as the world look on, it appears the Thunderbolts may have met their match, making matters worse when Meteorite is slammed through the arm of the Statue of Liberty, sending its torch to the waters below. The fight is finally ended when Mach 1 dispatches some knockout gas while Songbird creates hardened sound globes around the villains' heads, forcing them to breathe in the gas. Atlas also grows enormous and punches Bulldozer so hard he is knocked out of the fight and hundreds of feet into the air. Victorious, and as New York cheers them on, the Thunderbolts repair the Statue of Liberty, solidifying the team as heroes in the hearts of citizens and fellow superheroes alike. As the team contently relaxes back at their headquarters to watch the TV still covering their victory, Citizen V walks in without his mask, revealing a horribly disfigured man underneath, unnerving the rest of his team. Apologizing, he goes to his dresser, cue ominous music, to put on a mask. Only the mask is not that of Citizen V, but the mask of Helmet, 13th Baron Zemo. It is here it is revealed that Techno is actually the Fixer. Mach 1 is really the Beetle. Songbird is otherwise known as Screaming Mimi. Atlas, a.k.a. Goliath, and Meteorite was originally called Moonstone. That's right, our new champions were all villains known as the Masters of Evil. Wow. Yes, sir. Big time reveal, big time twist. I mean, like I said, if this would have been handed to me, I don't remember any of the hype, dude. I don't remember this being hyped at all, or I probably would have picked it up. But at that point, I think I'm picking up the X-books, and I'm primarily sticking in that realm. And I was afraid to venture out and pick up something new for fear of being let down. If I would have known, I didn't pay attention to writers back in the day. So, you know, like I've probably said on this podcast before, if you would have told me Alan Moore was doing blah, 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 you know, the only time I recognized Alan Moore's name is when he ruined Supreme for me. And that's the only time. I would have never known before then. So I wasn't paying attention to writers. So if you would have said Kurt Busiek, I would have been like, okay, but it's a new super team. I'm not that interested. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. I'm sticking with Cable. So
by this time, I mean, he was well regarded. I think at this time, I think Astro City had started by this time.
Oh, yeah.
Marvels had been out. Yeah. But for me, like Thunderbolts and the Avengers run that starts a few months after this, those are the kind of the key points for me that when I feel like he got elevated to like the upper echelon of like comic writers and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just know if I would have had this in my hands and read it and then would have seen the reveal at the end, I would have been on board for this book. How are we going to do this? Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, this issue was not the first appearance of the Thunderbolts. So
right.
They had been, you know, hyped up in like press and advertisements and stuff like that. But they had also appeared in a few other comics. They had their first appearance in The Incredible Hulk 449, which was released in November of 96. So we're talking like 3 months before this came out. And that was also at least advertised in some way because I picked it up and I was not reading Hulk at that time. And, you know, so I knew that they were going to be making their first appearance in that issue. So I picked it up for that reason to kind of get out on the ground floor. And then they showed up in, I believe it was called Tales of the Marvel Universe, which is like a one shot with like, it's like an anthology book that had like a Kazar story or a Kazar story, a Thunderbolt story, and maybe one or two others. And then they appeared in a Spider-Man team up book. So they were kind of getting peppered into these other Marvel appearances before, you know, to kind of build the hype up like every month until they had their first issue. And then they kind of, and it was always kind of a mystery, like who that, because they were all new characters, you know, you'd never seen them before. So like the origins were always like a super mysterious thing for these new characters. And then we get a bombshell dropped at the end of the
yeah.
first.
Yeah, actually, I mean, there's a couple other things that are kind of brought up in the book that, you know, they're really, really side things. Obviously, we get our first taste of the team, what they can do. Can they hold things on their own? And then, of course, we have the big reveal. There's a couple things I'm sure that are setting up storylines for later on down the road, where a lady by the name of Hallie Takahama gets abducted. And we see that at the very beginning, and then she's kind of sitting in a cell at the end. So I assume she's going to be a big player later on down the line. Am I right?
Yeah, she makes, I think she probably pops up in like similar cameos in the next couple issues. And then maybe around issue 4 or 5, she becomes a bigger character. She eventually becomes one of the members of the team.
That's what I thought.
Her name is Jolt. That's her superhero character name. So once they get to that point, they've got this new young idealistic, you know, teenage superhero who they have to, I forget exactly the reason why they agreed to let her join the team, but once
you'd think they'd want to keep it as a tight knit kind of like, hey, we're
right. Yeah. Because then they've got to keep it secret that who they really are from this new character, this new kid who thinks that they're all these great superheroes and whatnot, which was another like really cool element to bring into it. I actually have been reading, I guess maybe late last year, early this year, I started rereading, like I decided to reread the Thunderbolts run from beginning to end. And I'm a little over halfway. I mean, I'm taking it slowly. Obviously, I'm a little over halfway there. It's been a blast to go back and reread these.
How many issues total was there? Like, it was over 100, right?
Yeah, around issue like 70 something is when they switched. There was a really weird decision where I guess the book wasn't selling that well anymore. Busick left after issue 50 or issue 40 something, and then Bagley left after issue 50. But it kept going for a while, and I think around issue 74, 73, maybe 75, they switched. They got rid of all the characters, and the Thunderbolts book became like a Fight Club-style inspired superhero comic about, like, I guess, I never read any issues, so I don't really even know what it's about. Once the Thunderbolts superhero stuff ended, I quit buying that book.
That is strange.
Yeah, and it didn't do very well. It was canceled shortly after that, I believe. Huh. And then the Thunderbolts stuff kind of came back in around the Civil War era, I think, of Marvel stuff. They started bringing that stuff back.
Got it.
Anyway, I've got us all kinds of sidetracked.
But. Oh, you're all right. The other person I wanted to mention was Dallas Riordan. I don't know how to pronounce that last name. She feels like she's going to be somebody that, what was she, like a lord?
Wow, she's like a liaison from the mayor's office.
Okay.
Because the mayor wants to make sure that this is New York's superhero team, basically. And so, yeah, she's kind of the Henry Gyrich to the Avengers, sort of. Although Henry Gyrich was more of a bad guy. Riordan wasn't really that combative as much as Gyrich was with the Avengers. But yeah, she was just kind of like a political liaison for the team with the city.
Got it.
But so, yeah, like, her storyline gets really complicated as it goes on. But that's the basics of how it starts anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they're just kind of tossing things in there because they just know. Seeds. Exactly. So real quick, I've ventured over to CBR.com, and there was an article, I think it was called, like, How the Thunderbolts Fooled the Marvel Universe, and that's where I grabbed some quotes about how about Busick's initial idea for the Thunderbolts. Now, do you know, have you heard this story about what he was originally thinking?
The story about him coming up with it on a car trip?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I had read. Like, he was planning, according to what I read, his plan was to come up with a story about replacing the whole Avengers team, like this really long plot of replacing Avengers members with villains who obviously were masquerading as heroes.
Yeah, I think he initially planned it as an Avengers run. Like, what if I was doing an Avengers book?
Yeah. So he decides not to do that because he's kind of afraid of the reaction, I think, number one, of even though it would have been a neat concept, he was afraid that probably wouldn't go over so well. But then Onslaught happened, and that opens it up, and he's like, okay, Avengers are gone from the Marvel Universe right now. Here come the Thunderbolts. So that's where he put his plan into action. One of the things I also had learned doing some research from Looper.com, an article written by Micheline Martin, June 3rd, 2020, they were talking about how there's a quote in this book that Citizen V rattles off to the press in why he came up with the Thunderbolts. So Kurt obviously decided to use that. that quote, and he, I think, misquoted the person. So the name,
the poetry quote.
Yeah, it says, from the 17th century poet Thomas Randolph, "Justice like lightning ever should appear to few men ruin, but to all men fear." But Busiek finds out later that he learned that from, a fellow comic book writer.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out that that's not the case. Randolph actually may have written the lines. I'm quoting this verbatim here. "Randolph actually may have written the lines, but the truth is unclear. Rather than showing up in a standalone poem, the lines appear as dialogue in the 1620 play, oh boy, Swetnam the Woman Hater." Okay. "Swetnam the Woman Hater, Arraigned by Women." Some scholars believe Randolph was the play's author, but no one knows for sure. At the same time, some believe it was originally written hundreds of years earlier in the 14th century by an Irish archbishop, Milo Sweetman. So there you go. I thought that was pretty neat because not that big of a deal in my opinion, but I think Busiek finds out.
Kind of appropriate that.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah, this poet is using deception to pass this off as his own.
That's true.
Quote.
Yep. Now, I just real quick. I mean, I don't want to get into anything else additional because I have some stuff about the Thunderbolts TV series I kind of wanted to bring up. But let's talk about the comic here first. What do you got to say about the comic, dude? I mean, I talked about the synopsis. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a lot. Like again, like I before we started recording, I had mentioned that I kind of got behind schedule because I got ready to crack this open, you know, an hour before we were supposed to start. I realized, oh, this is a double sized issue. And Busiek's wordy anyway, so like, oh, this is going to take me a minute to get through. So, yeah, a lot here to kind of chew on. The opening is really cool. It kind of sets up the world post on the Marvel Universe post onslaught. The wreckage of New York. I mean, fire still raging. You know, as this reporter is making this opening newscast talking about, you know, the Avengers are gone, the Fantastic Four are gone. Who's going to protect the world from all these, you know, supervillain threats that are these countless threats that are out there. And there's a cool quote in that part of this, of the comic from a beat cop. And I'll just read the quote because it kind of shows you how the citizens of the Marvel Universe view some of the other, like the remaining heroes that are left after the, you know, the great Avengers and Fantastic Four are gone. And he says, yeah. And look who we got left to tackle these guys, mutant terrorists, kid outlaw, vigilantes, monsters like the Hulk. Not exactly the kind of people who make you feel safe in your bed, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of environment that Baron Zemo sees and realizes, hey, this is a great opportunity for us to endear ourselves to the rest of the world, you know, as by masquerading as these superheroes.
Yeah, I remember one of the things, if I remember correctly, when we were doing the podcast for Onslaught, you know, I don't think any of the mutants were taken over to the Heroes Reborn universe.
Yeah, because plot wise, they set it up where the mutants would make Onslaught stronger if they, you know, went into the field or whatever that the heroes were jumping into to defeat him.
Yeah, and so
they had to stay.
Yeah, there was a lot of resentment over the fact that mutants did not sacrifice themselves.
Sure.
To go in there and in the, you know, in the Onslaught, and I remember that they left and they weren't looked. Mutants, the X-Men, whatever, were not looked as heroes, even though they played a major part in taking down Onslaught. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's a void. There's definitely somebody that needs to step up. Spider-Man's still on the streets, but he's one man. You know, he's one person. I think there's an appearance by the Black Widow. I know that much. Mm-hmm. She actually lives. She's not one of the Avengers that went over. And then Night Thrasher and what are they called?
New Warriors. Yeah.
New Warriors. Thank you. They show up here as well. And so, yeah, the cops got a point. I mean, the New Warriors, if anything, are probably inexperienced. We know what happens to them later on down the road. In Spider-Man, he's always had that thing hanging over his head as to whether he's a, you know,
threat or menace.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it is a perfect opportunity for this team to step in, and boy, do they lay it on thick that they're like the perfect superhero team, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, especially Citizen V, he's basically channeling Captain America with like all of his speeches and, you know, the flowery language about how they could never replace the Avengers and like the way they treat the Statue of Liberty with such reverence at the end story. He's basically playing the public like a fiddle, like, and perfectly.
One of the comments that I read was just the audacity of Baron Zemo to wear the American flag. Yeah. I mean, wow. That's taking it to another level and being just flamboyantly, for what you stood for, this is what you're doing. You're wearing the American flag. And you know, the Masters of Evil, can't say that I've come across them too often when I'm reading comics. I either just don't. I wasn't ever an Avengers guy. I didn't follow Captain America a whole lot. So I know these are very big fixtures in Avengers lore. I mean, the Masters of Evil, those are the guys that destroyed the mansion, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the famous, one of the most famous Avengers stories is where they destroy the mansion, essentially, and nearly kill Jarvis. I've never actually read that story. That was, an early 80s or a late 70s storyline.
I think we were talking about that when we did Kree-Skrull War, if I remember right. So I don't think it had happened, but I think it was something that was going to happen at some point. But I remember hearing it in passing. I don't remember reading it either. I just know that that was one of the more famous things that the Masters of Evil have done. And as for the rest of the, these characters, let me run down through our villains one more time. We talked about Baron Zemo a whole lot. We can make this quick, but the Fixer, you ever read anything with the Fixer in it?
No.
Okay, how about the Beetle?
Yeah, the Beetle I was really familiar with because he was a Spider-Man villain. I guess he started it maybe as an Iron Man villain, and he might have kind of jumped around to different Marvel, heroes. But I mostly remember him from the Deadly Foes of Spider-Man miniseries, which is a big thing for me because it was one of the first miniseries comics that I'd ever read. It was like, oh, this is like 4 issues and it's a complete thing all by itself. Awesome. So yeah, he was one of them. He showed up in a few other Spider-Man comics I'd read before this, so he was the one I was most familiar with out of all these characters. Eric Joston, or Joston, who is Atlas here. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
I don't know if that's his actual name. I know Goliath is the guy.
Goliath. Yeah. Okay. Atlas is a Liefeld character. Goliath.
His name is Atlas, though, on the team, right?
Okay. Atlas, and then Goliath was his villain name. Yeah.
Hey, there you go. Okay.
Yeah, he had been a Wonder Man villain, and I like the solo Wonder Man comics from the 90s, and he's like the bad guy in the first issue of that. Okay. So I had read, a little bit with him in it too at that point. But
Screaming Mimi?
I don't think I knew her before this, no.
Okay, and then Moonstone, which I've heard before, but I don't know if I've ever read anything about her.
Yeah, I don't think I'd ever read anything. I think I knew who she was. I knew Baron Zemo and Beetle, but the others I wasn't really that familiar with, though.
Okay. All right. Well,
did not lessen the impact, though.
No, it didn't. I mean, you're talking about a superhero team that, it's got the whole public full. I mean, the media adores them. Now, even in the age of 2020, we can talk about how the media can adore villains.
Yeah,
I think that's it's so crazy how true some of these tropes are, and they stick through decades of things. And I'm guessing here, because like I said, I've never read any Thunderbolts at all past this issue. But I mean, the first thing that they do, just like I said, they come out, they impress with their power, and they're able to take down the Wrecking Crew. And not only do they do that, but they do it in front of video cameras. They do it in front of the media, and they come out and they're very open too. I mean, that first interview, like, hey, how about we each, sit down and interview with members of the media?
Let's give you guys some one-on-one time.
Exactly. And you're like, oh my goodness, man, they are playing everybody. And I'm sure that if the media get behind them and enough people believe them, how tough is it going to be to try and tell people that they're actually villains if you're the one that knows? So I'm a lot of good grist for the mill right here just for that first issue, So anything else on the issue itself? Do you have any favorite panels or what else you want to talk about?
Quickly, I did want to point out the Rat Pack, which is like mercenaries they fight in their first like battle here in this issue. That is in Kurt Busiek style. That's a little known group that had from Marvel's rich history of characters that they first appeared in 1970.
Oh, wow.
In a Captain Marvel issue. They were created by Roy Thomas, who I believe is a frequent collaborator with Busiek as well. Citizen V, I don't know that he had really had any appearances between this and his original incarnation, which was in the 1940s. His first appearance was in 1942 in Daring Mystery Comics number 8.
Wow.
And so Citizen V, various people, you know, wore the Citizen V costume throughout the Thunderbolts run. Once Zemo was out of the picture, there were other Citizen Vs that would come and go. And there have been more, I think, up to this day. But yeah, that character was an ancient Marvel lineage there. And I also kind of wanted to point out in this first fight, you know, we see Techno kind of not obeying orders and getting Atlas in trouble, you know, because he didn't do what he was told, basically. And that's something that Pusick is really good at, like with this and Avengers and other team books, is he's always showing the strategy that these teams are trying to put together. And it just makes it a little more realistic rather than just a bunch of superheroes and villains fighting each other and slugging it out. He's always making sure to give them a plan of attack to follow. And it gives them a chance to personality clash and stuff like that, which is always makes it more interesting.
Yeah. Techno was like hot dogging at one point. wasn't obeying orders, or at least the strategy, and end up putting some people in danger, including Atlas, who took a freaking bazooka to the back, which rat pack running around with some hardware there.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
well, jetpacks.
Yeah, no kidding. There was one funny part in the book where Techno's sitting in his room at the headquarters, which, by the way, their headquarters is, ladies and gentlemen, it's not lavish. Okay. It's like in the basement of some just half destroyed building. Atlas is sitting on this chair. It looks like it's been through three or four different bed bug infestations. It's not looking good. And and Techno's sitting there, and he has this robot, which reminds me of the robot from Rocky. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about there, but
yeah,
and it's just bringing him a drink. And Meteorite has a problem with that, which I don't know why. She's afraid the media is going to find out that he has a robot, which I guess may lead back to the fact that he's the fixer. I don't know, but she straight up destroys this poor robot that offers her a drink. And I'm just like, Meteorite,
yeah,
come
on. Yeah, the best
man.
Part is the robot has this sunny disposition. He's got a big smile on his face, offering her a daiquiri. He just obliterates it with a power.
Yep.
You know?
Boom, gone.
But yeah, the reasoning behind that, it doesn't really get into it in this issue, is Citizen V makes sure that the press see where they go back to their hideout and follows them back there. He wants them to see that they're not in some fancy headquarters, that they're basically living in a slum, you know, a dilapidated abandoned building in this wrecked part of town. And that's all part of his plan, because within a few issues, they're setting up shop in the Baxter building.
Playing them like a fiddle. Wow. Well, I got a favorite panel. I mean, I don't know if you're going to go with the reveal, because that's kind of like the obvious pick. So,
yeah. And I mean, there are really a lot of really cool ones. There's the reveal. There's the first time the Thunderbolts show up. It's a full page spread. It's a really cool image. I'm actually going to go with a less fancy one, which is it's on page 13. It's one of the second to last panel. It's the first time we see Mach 1, which, what an awesome design for Mach 1. I love the way he looks.
Yeah.
Basically a jetpack suit, basically. Mm-hmm. Or not a jetpack, but like a fighter jet suit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, when he's kind of zooming through the air and unleashing some missiles and like grenades at the Rat Pack members on the ground, just really kinetic, exciting looking image there. That's probably my favorite panel.
I'll go with my favorite panel/moment, aside from the big reveal. Mm-hmm. And that is when Atlas was taken out.
Oh.
And he falls into the river, and everybody thinks he's dead, but they're able to regroup enough to where they can take care of all the Wrecking Crew except for Bulldozer. And I can't remember who took him out. I think it was, actually, I'm trying to find the page here, because I think he mentions him, because he's like, I can't find him, but I'll take you instead.
Thunderball is the one that had...
Oh, that's right. Thunderball nails him with his, I guess, Thunderball, right? right upside his face, and launches him into the river. Is this the river or the sea? Actually, this is the sea, isn't it? anyway, he launches him into the water, and that's all you see of Atlas for, like, I don't know, a couple pages.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know if he's okay, if he's alive, dead, whatever. And he comes up out after the rest of the Wrecking Crew are taken care of. Last person that's left is Bulldozer, who apparently his mask, they couldn't get the gas into his face.
Right.
So he comes up, and I mean, he is mad. He is ready to take somebody out. And you can just see on his face, he grows this huge size and he nails Bulldozer and sends him flying. So that was, I was like, yeah, man, that was pretty cool. I don't know why I like that, because I don't know if it's just because he come out of the water and he's like, all right, it's on. And then just boom, sends him flying. So there you go. And of course, I mean, the big reveal with it can't be understated here how just crazy it is to watch Baron Zemo maskless.
Yeah.
Just walking. It looks like a zombie almost. I mean, has no nose.
He's rotting away, basically.
Yeah, it's disgusting. And he walks over, he opens the cupboard and puts on that very familiar hood. And, you know, the Masters of Evil. So,
you know, also the first image above him, above the when he's first walking into the room and they're all watching the television, just the looks on all the Thunderbolts' faces, especially Mach 1 and Songbird, like this kind of a sinister satisfaction on their face as they're watching all this great coverage they're getting on the news. Like,
all going according to plan.
It's happening.
Yep. All going according to plan. Yeah. When you look back at, you know, there's a couple points. I'm sure this is one of those issues where if you're reading it the first time, you're like, I've got to go read it again, because you know that was all set up originally. I'm sure there's going to be something in this book that kind of pointed towards it, and I just missed it initially. And that right there is a perfect example of it. As they're sitting there now, even though it looks like they're pleased initially, you go back and look at it. Yeah, they're very pleased because they know everything is going like they want it to. So very cool. Well, for I wanted to jump in. I just want to talk about the possibility of the Thunderbolts TV series. Anything else, though, before I get into that?
Yeah, just real quickly. We've talked about Bagley before on other episodes, but one of my favorite comic artists ever, and his Thunderbolts run might be my favorite run of his work. I feel like he kind of peaked at around this time, and the Ultimate Spider-Man, early Ultimate Spider-Man stuff. But the energy in a lot of these fight scenes, it seems like on a lot of these pages, the line work is a little lighter, a little sharper, more angular. Maybe that has to do with the inker. His inker was Vince Russell in this issue, which I don't think was the guy he normally had inking his stuff, but it works really well. I think it's one of the better issues front to back of Bagley stuff. And it's also got some of that mid-90s, late-90s, like digital effects, which look dated in a lot of comics, but I feel like they work really well in this one with some of the, like, the moonstone, like, glowing effects at times. And there's a shot where Mach 1 gets, like, electrified, and, like, his whole body is, like, electrified for a second, and it looks, just works really well. I think it looks really cool. So I'm a big fan of the art as well as, like, the really good story. I'm a huge fan of Thunderbolts. I don't know if I made that clear. But really cool issue. So, yeah, I haven't heard anything about really – I've heard, like, just quick rumors and stuff about a series. I would love it if it happened. So, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, just to kind of jump off your Bagley art discussion there, dude, his Spider-Man appearance in here and him drawing Spider-Man, that is prime Spider-Man. I mean, it's just one panel. But you look at that Spider-Man, you're like, yeah, that is a...
A lot of people talk about, like, Ditko because he was the original Spider-Man artist, and especially John Romita Sr. because he did a lot of the big stories in the 70s and stuff as being, like, the seminal artist for Spider-Man. But to me, it's always Bagley. He's the one. When I think Spider-Man, I picture a Bagley Spider-Man from the 90s. A lot of great Spider-Man artists out there, but yeah, he, for me, Spider-Man, it's Bagley. And it's also cool that in the same page he's got the New Warriors in there, because the New Warriors is a book he was on for years before he was on Spider-Man. So his two big books before this were pretty much New Warriors and Spider-Man, and he got to draw them both in the same breath there.
Very cool. Well, yeah, so the only reason I'm bringing this up is because we're recording this 2 days outside of the Disney Investor Day, which I don't know if you heard much of that, but
I've seen a handful of stuff, but I don't know if I've actually seen a complete rundown of everything they announced, no.
Okay. So, yeah, it lit up people. I'm W2M Network, boy, my goodness. They were just burning up the messages. But anyway, Investor Day was December 10th, and what they were doing was they were running down what was on slate, what they had planned for Disney Plus. And a lot of people out there, if you follow superheroes on TV, especially the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the Marvel television series that they had on Netflix, when Disney Plus took over, or brought out their own network. There's a lot of things that were up in the air, especially with the Marvel TV series that were out there. Daredevil, Punisher, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, all that was up in the air as to what was going to happen now. So they looked to the December 10th Disney investor day to kind of get an idea as to how and what is in store for the Marvel Cinematic Universe and all the television series. So back in, I got a little bit of a timeline here. So Cinema Blend, back in, this is July 28, 2015, an article published by Adam Holmes is Marvel making a Thunderbolts TV series. So the only thing I pulled from this is that a YouTube account called The Hashtag Show reports that Marvel is developing a Thunderbolts TV series for Netflix. Well, that was 5 years ago. You could probably guess that isn't going to be happening now, especially with Netflix and Marvel. Now, this was probably rumor, you know, as in most of this, I'm not. Obviously, they already say it's just as a YouTube account reported it. Anybody could report anything. So then we get to CBR.com article by Megan Damore or Damore, January 20th, 2020. Thunderbolts may make their Marvel Cinematic Universe debut in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Ooh.
So I don't know if you heard about.
I remember that. I remember reading that headline back. Yeah.
All right. So November 3rd, 2020, this is a little bit more than a month ago as of recording. This came from ScreenRant.com by Nicholas Raymond. I didn't grab any articles from We Got This Covered. So please at least give me that much credit. But by Nicholas Raymond, November 3rd, 2020, there's a reasonable amount of evidence pointing to the Thunderbolts making their long-awaited MCU debut in Marvel's The Falcon and the Winter Soldier series on Disney+. Now, I jumped into Disney Investor Day. They listed everything. So I was like, well, let's just see if there is an actual TV series that's going to happen or if it's definitely, as the most recent reports are saying, going to be popping up in The Falcon and Winter Soldier. And according to what I saw, I didn't see any mention whatsoever of a Thunderbolts TV series on there. So if the Thunderbolts show up in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I do not want it just to be a one or two episode thing.
Right.
That is a plot that needs to be at least... Yeah. At least half of the season.
Well, I know Baron Zemo is coming back as the villain.
Okay.
I want to say I've even seen an image of him on, like an image of him in the purple mask. I don't know if it was real or not, because I normally try to avoid spoilers anyway. So
I'm right with
you. I don't invest when I see stuff like that. I don't really look into it because I don't really want to know.
I saw the same image I think you're talking about, but the one that I saw had Thunderbolts written down underneath of it. So it makes me think that that was something that was probably put together when they were talking about a TV series at some point.
I do know that they're bringing in U.S. Agent.
Ooh.
I've seen him, and it's cool because it's Wyatt Russell, Kurt Russell's son, is playing John Walker, U.S. Agent. So it would make sense. You know, MCU always has to kind of twist things around and to make the comic book lore kind of fit into what they're doing in the MCU. So I can see potentially them using U.S. Agent as a way to get public sentiment behind whatever they're doing and him actually being, you know, part of like a Thunderbolt style, like bad guy.
Yes.
You
know, yes.
Taking up the mantle of a Captain America type character to get the public on their side and stuff like that. I could see that. That would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't heard much else about it. I just dug into the
trailer for Winter Soldier and Falcon, and it looks pretty badass.
So. Does it? Okay, good. Yeah, I can't remember when they said it was going to be happening. Actually, that was on Disney Investor Day, but I want to say
it's pretty soon. I want to say it's like in WandaVision is in January, and I want to say it's in like March or April for Winter Soldier Falcon. It's not too far off.
I'm a hopping on the internet right now. The series will now premiere on March 19th, 2021. So, yeah, there we go. About three months from the date of this recording.
Bring on the Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
A couple of things I pulled off of Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Referencing the twist. It says this is considered one of the most well-conceived plot twists in the history of American comic books, with Wizard magazine readers voting it comics' greatest moment of 1997. And later in 1999, placing it at number 11 on a list of the 25 greatest comic book moments ever. Yeah. Also, in reference to the format change, despite critical acclaim, the book was reformatted with Thunderbolts number 76 in March of 2003, removing the entire cast and creative team and replacing it with a brand new set of characters along with a new writer, John Arcudi. The movie.
Oh, you know what? John Arcudi's popped up in source material once or twice. He did an Alien series that... We weren't impressed with, but go ahead.
I know his name, but I don't think I've ever read anything that he's done.
Yeah.
It says the move was done in part due to Marvel editor-in-chief Joe Quesada's desire to emulate the success he had with X-Force, which he had reformatted with a new cast of characters and status quo that was successful in sales and popularity. However, the new direction for the series, an underground fighting circuit that employed predominantly newly created supervillain characters, was a commercial failure and canceled after 6 issues. So that's how that went. The comments had several this time. Apologies in advance if I get any of these names wrong. I'm not good. Brian Ramecki says, hard call, but I love both. The Thunderbolts put my jaw on the floor back then.
One of the people that got in on the ground floor. Nice.
Yeah. Condria Anavis, Thunderbolts Forever. Joshua Daniel Rathburn, Thunderbolts. Ian Francis, Kurt Busiek in top form? Question mark. Always a huge appeal for me. And then some kind of emoji. I don't know what that one is. Sorry. Christopher Franey, with Armageddon 2001, you have a huge story change because of fandom finding out the ending. So there was a last minute play. Plus, I guess he's saying he voted for Armageddon 2001. Okay. Plus, how cool would it be if DC did the original version as one of their dark multiverse stories? Which Brian Ramecki comments in response. Yes, that's something I'd read in a heartbeat.
Yeah, heck yeah, dude.
It seemed like that's one they'd have to do because they're still putting those Dark Multiverse books out.
Is it the Black Label?
No, Dark Multiverse is where they, I've never read any of them, but basically they just take like an old event and I guess do like an alternate version of it. They've done, one of the recent ones was War of the Gods, a Wonder Woman story from the 80s, and then they did Flashpoint, I think this week was one. Or last week, I think they did a Flashpoint one. So, yeah, I could see them doing Armageddon 2001.
That sounds right up my alley. I need to check that out.
Yeah, they've done a bunch of those Dark Multiverse stories, and I've pulled several for my pull box at the comic shop, but I've yet to actually buy or read any of them. Yeah. So, one day. And then last comment was Antoine Rogers. I think he's just kind of commenting on the Armageddon storyline. He says, Captain Atom later became Monarch after Infinite Crisis. It happened during the Battle for Bloodhaven miniseries that came out around the 52 weekly series. The real Captain Atom is in the real DC universe. He would later show up in the Countdown miniseries and kidnapped every version of Captain Atom from Multiverse and fought Superboy Prime. Prime ripped his suit and he would explode.
I remember that.
I guess that's how the retcon kind of played out.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, we appreciate everybody interacting with us and giving us some input on why they picked what they did. And I really hope everybody enjoyed our coverage of Thunderbolts number one. Chris Armstrong, you got anything else before we get out of here?
You know, I think I've said enough.
All right. Very good. Well, let's go ahead. We'll get into plugs. Number one, I props to our good friends over at the Unspoken Decade and everybody at the Unspoken Decade Facebook page. You know, we've got to thank the W2M Network for hosting the podcast. And I think if you have the time on your hands, go over and check out the Unspoken Decade Facebook page. I know I have one article, and you know what? I don't know if I should say this, because if I say it, I'm going to have to do it. But I've already done it, sort of. I had a vacation a couple weeks ago, and I sat down, and I wrote some stuff. There's more that needs to be written. But do you remember the Image series Nightmare?
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right, Don Quixote and this Quixotic superhero. I doubt I said that right. I remember it existing.
I've never read it.
Well, folks, I have synopsized and whatever, however you say it, synopsized. I have read all, I think it was five or six issues of the series. I got notes. I got things laid out there. And at some point, I plan to put that onto the Unspoken Decade website. I'll have something up there probably either before the end of the year or right after the beginning of 2021. Yeah, Nightmare. Hey, look, it was an Image series. I bought it because I thought the covers looked cool. And I've probably read, I think I got every issue except for one. At some point, ladies and gentlemen, look forward to a nightmare exclusive on the unspokendecade.com. So, yeah, I think you need to go check out some of the other articles that are on there. Chris Armstrong, I know you have wrote a couple pieces before, correct? Yep. And then we have, I know Dean Compton's wrote some things on there. Just recently, I want to head over to the unspokendecade.com because I think, was it our Prophet article?
I think that was the most recent one.
Do we have anything on the Thunderbolts over there already? So Simifan comes through, 3 days ago. So Simifan wrote, he's a hit. The Short History of Fight Man.
Hmm.
So if you get the chance, go check that out. That is on unspokendecade.com website. And let me just do a search just to see. Thunderbolts. You do a search for Thunderbolts. A few things come up as to whether it is completely related, but I'll read them off anyway. Death is What Happens While You're Making Other Plans, published in 2015. Exiles Part 2. Onslaught, A Look Back at the Mutant Menace. His name came up a couple times. That was written back in 2014. Aversion Has Delight, a U.S. agent gallery. We talked about him on here. So You can find any sorts of articles over there on the unspokendecade.com. A look at 90s comics. Chris Armstrong, I babbled long enough. What do you got going on, man?
Not a whole lot, but you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at BrodyMan34.
All right, very good. If you wish to follow me, you can do so at Stiznarchy on the Twitter. And yeah, again, we can't thank you guys enough. I think that's going to end the episode right here. For Chris Armstrong, I'm Jesse Starcher. Have a good one.